Are you ready to become a better version of yourself, to become a leader in your personal and professional life? Then welcome to the CJ Evolution Podcast, where we put a twist on traditional criminal justice professions and provide you with the tools you need to set yourself up for success in your career and for the future. Now, welcome your host, the CJ Evolutionist himself, Patrick Fitzgibbons.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Episode 245, 245 episodes. Made possible by you, the listener and supporter. Thank you so much, Patrick here. I'm the host and creator of this great show we call CJ Evolution. This is a podcast for the criminal justice professional like you, hosted by me, another CJ professional. If you're a longtime listener, welcome back. If you're new to the show, thank you. We hope you stick around. We have great guests, great content. You're going to love it. I am so excited to be partnering with Four Sigmatic. I've said this many times. I want to keep saying it. I love their coffee, most notably their mushroom coffee. If you head over to the website, cgevolution.com, you're going to see all the products they have by clicking that link for Four Sigmatic, and you're going to get 15% off using the promo code CJEVO. You know, folks, one of the reasons, or one of the main reasons, why the CJ podcast continues to grow is because of recognition and most notably ratings. If you head over to iTunes, you're going to see a link on the website. I sure would appreciate a rating and review of the show when you get a chance. Thank you so much. You know, folks, I'm so excited to have the next guest on the show. He went from top cop to fugitive, and he was living in the forest for many, many years. Seriously, you got to listen to this next great show. Enjoy. Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Very excited to have my next guest on the show, Robert Leon Davis. At one time, he was a very respected member of the New Orleans Police Department. He served several years until 1979, and he was arrested. I'm going to let him fill in the details. Sir, are you there?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Well, Robert, thank you for coming on the show, sir. I know you're very, very busy. But again, we talked a little bit off the air, and your story is just amazing. And I know I probably didn't give you a good enough bio there, but you were a police officer for a while, and then you were arrested. What happened?
During the time that I was on the force during the 70s, crime was very high here. Mm-hmm. And it was also kind of high even with the officers in that. I'll put it like this. I noticed one time an officer when we came out the academy making an unwarranted stop. Mm-hmm. And I complained about it to my commander. And one of the things he told me was, listen, I can throw this in the garbage can and we can act like we never had this conversation. Or I could report it to headquarters, but nobody would want to ride with you. You would probably have a mark on your back. Mm-hmm. And you're young, 22, 23 years old. I kind of joined the crowd, as I say, mm-hmm. and became a rogue police officer. And keep in mind, all the police officers wasn't bad. But it was just a certain percentage of them, just like you got bad carpenters and bad hairdressers, you know. Mm-hmm. There's a percentage of bad in everything.
Yeah.
And that's just how that went. So wind up committing a crime on the job, as you put there, and was looking at 30 years in Angola. And I don't know if you all or your audience is familiar with Angola back in the 70s. Mm-hmm. It was known as the Farm, and it was one of the worst prisons in the United States. Mm-hmm. And when I had a preliminary hearing just before I fled, when I was arrested and had a court hearing, one of the sheriffs that I knew that worked in Angola came back with a message. And the message was that some of the people that I had arrested and put in jail,
they're waiting for you.
Yeah, they said they had a special party for me. So I knew what that meant. Mm-hmm. Rape and debt. And it's kind of a no-brainer at that point as to what you're going to do. I mean, because during that time in the 70s, there wasn't segregated populations for bad cops, bad politicians, so forth and so forth. It was just put in general population. Of course, it's different now in 2018. Mm-hmm. You get arrested and you tend to be someone like that, a high-profile prisoner. you know, it's a little different now. They segregate you. But back then, no, I was looking at certain debt.
Mm-hmm. And, the one thing that really amazes me about you, Robert, is you grew up, your grandmother, you know, was very, you grew up in a very religious household, right?
Right, very religious.
And what made you want to become a cop? Because you started out, like you said, with good intentions. You wanted to do the right thing.
Next door living to me was two police officers. Actually, it was a family of police officers. Mm-hmm. The mother was a police officer, the dad was a police officer, and the two sons were police officers. And it's sort of comical in how I got into it because at that time, even though I came up from a religious household, mm-hmm. I was probably the only one of nine siblings that was a little heady minded. I was still had a little criminality in me. Everybody else were pretty straight and narrow. And I used to steal cars. And when I was young, mm-hmm. and I thought, you know, we used to steal them and sell them for the parts. And I thought in my crazy mind when I was around 15 to 16, I was helping my grandmother out because I didn't come up in we didn't have a father in the house and we didn't have a mother in the house. And the only person that we had was my grandmother. And my grandmother, we come up dirt poor. Mm-hmm. But later looking back, I mean, she was the rock in our family. Mm-hmm. But I do remember her suffering and borrowing money and having to pay people back on the first of the month and not having much of anything. So I thought I was helping her in a way, mm-hmm. You know, with a little bit, with some money. And she would question me about it sometimes. And I would say, hey, listen, I've done some odd jobs or I cut some grass, whatever lie I can come up with. But eventually it was funny because I said that it's sort of comical in that the police officers there were looking for whoever was stealing these cars. And my neighbors were having a conversation with me, a family of cops, as to, you know, they were trying to figure out who were in the neighborhood stealing these cars. And he was talking to the one that was doing it. so he brought up the conversation. He said, you know, you need to get out of this neighborhood. You need to, at this point, I'm getting a lot older. I'm like 18, 19. Yeah. You need to get out of this area and so forth. And I can help you get on. I can give you a reference and blah, blah, blah. So I did it. I mostly did it as a challenge, you know, just to see if I could pass it. But as I got into it, the training itself at the academy, it was so deep that I fell in love with it. Yeah. I mean, I went on, really changed my mind and changed my whole mentality about it. Matter of fact, I told my grandmother, listen, I'm going to be an officer. She said, yeah, that's a good thing. Yeah. And, so I went on to the academy, and you know how it is in the academy. You know, I wound up winning all kind of awards in the academy. The academy made me change my whole mentality about honor. Eventually, I carried on the force with me as I became a rookie. I carried that honor with me. Mm-hmm. Like I said, it was just one bad person that I got paired with.
But that person had some influence over you.
Yeah, well, that person had been on the force over 15 years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he said, it's not done like that. It's done like this. And we were stopping guys for no reason, mm-hmm. stopping cars for no reason. And it put me in a position where I had to make the complaint to my commander. Mm-hmm. But I didn't understand the political ramifications involved in it. Yeah. Now, it's different now, Patrick, in that a police officer now can complain anonymously to another commander mm-hmm. without his name being revealed. Mm-hmm. You see, so it's made the department is in better shape now. But during the 70s, that so you would have had to reveal your name. And if you're out there on a hot call, you know, on a burglary call or kidnap and rape charge, you know, you're going to have a slow backup time purposely done. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. It sounds like Serpico. You know who Frank Serpico
yeah,
is.
Yeah, same.
It sounds like him where, you know, and I think they ended up actually shooting his partners and ended up trying to kill him, which is, it's just horrible that you were trying to do the right thing. Now, what you did obviously was wrong, but you went down that path. But you were trying to do the right thing and, you know, turn in another cop and, you know, Now, it just went south. Now, the one thing we kind of speed up to what we were talking about before, sir, is you got in trouble. I think Internal Affairs was investigating you, and right. you were going to go to prison. Now what?
At this point, I had a trial date set up, and 3 months from that message I got, that threat message, and I decided that the only way I could be able to get out of this was to run. Mm-hmm. And being I was a police officer and I understood a lot about different kind of tactics, I knew that I couldn't normally live in just in any old city and use my social security number and mm-hmm. act like anything was okay. So the only thing I could figure out was, I said, I probably can go in the woods and stay. You know, I said, that would be a place they probably would never catch me or never think about looking for me at. Mm-hmm. And so every day for those 3 months, because during that time, there was no laptop computers. Mm-hmm. You had to go into the library and use read books and stuff like that. Computers wasn't in wide use during that time. Not laptops and stuff like that. Anyway, I went and I needed to understand how to hunt and field dress animals. I need to understand. I read books about tracking animals, navigation, map reading, mm-hmm. how to use a compass. I had to learn first aid techniques because I knew I would be out in the middle of nowhere. Mm-hmm. I had to learn about weather techniques and what plants I can eat, what berries I can eat.
Jeez.
Body temperature regulation. And I mean, it's just a massive amount of stuff because you're out. I knew that I was going to be in a place that was going to be far from civilization. Mm-hmm. And I wind up going up to a place in Canada. Everything started in New Orleans, but I wind up going to a forest called Gatineau National Forest in Canada, in Ontario, Canada. And I could distinctly remember I was on a little country road and I had all my camping gear set up. And I distinctly remember looking to the south and looking to the north and saying goodbye, world.
Yeah.
I went back there and I went deep into the woods. And it's a different thing when you study something in a book, but to actually apply it mm-hmm. is another thing. And I stayed out there for quite a long time. I was a fugitive actually for 22 years.
Yeah.
I didn't turn myself in until 2001.
Now, what did you, I know you thought about this, Robert, but when you decided to run, I mean, you obviously, was your grandmother still alive and you still had family?
Fortunately, she had died.
Oh, she died. Okay.
If it's kind of a funny thing, I'm glad mm-hmm. that she didn't see my failure.
She didn't see that, yeah.
Yeah, she died in 1978, and I went on the run in 79. So I'm glad she didn't see that. She saw the good part of me, the graduations and all that stuff, mm-hmm. but I'm glad she didn't see that.
Now, did you ever see anything? I mean, I know you were far away, and times were different than with communications and mass communication. We didn't have it, we didn't have the internet, obviously. Did you ever hear anything or see anything? Because I imagine you would come out of the woods periodically.
Right.
Did you ever see anything that, a picture of you saying, hey, this guy's a fugitive, even though you were in Canada, it didn't make its way up there?
I heard, when I would come out of the woods, maybe to earn some money for some canned goods or stuff like that, I might be out for 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. You go to these missions, these homeless places and so forth. And a lot of times they have your picture. They have pictures of people that are wanted.
Yeah.
And there have been a lot of times that I've wound up in places like that and saw my picture. Because I had changed through the years, I started really seeing it. Because when I first left, the U.S. Marshal Service was in looking for me. And the FBI was looking for me, too, because of course, an interstate flight to avoid persecution anytime you leave the state for a felony. Mm-hmm. The FBI gets into it. So, yeah, I knew through the grapevine, so to speak, through that culture of homeless people that I was wanted and being looked for. And I even found out that later I found out when I turned myself in, my mom told me that she had the phone was tapped. Of course, I knew to never call. Like, if I would have called, it would have never been on the days like Christmas, Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm. Those were the days that I were weak mentally, mm-hmm. Personally, spiritually, you know, longing for my siblings. Like I said, I come from a family of nine. Mm-hmm. Miss my mom, miss my sisters, miss my brothers. And yeah, there was a few times I thought about calling, but I knew, you know, I knew the tactics, you know, that mm-hmm. they were used. So no, I just dug in, you know, I said, you know, I caused this on myself and, you know, I'm going to have to deal with it. Which case I do want to say this, and I don't want anyone to get the bad thing where thinking that all cops are bad. That is certainly not true. Mm-hmm. Because even then I met some honorable cops. And since being home now and writing my book about my story, and, mm-hmm. I know a lot of honorable cops. But like I'm saying, I'm just bad. I'm just anti-bad cop. Mm-hmm. I don't want any of the listeners to think that, because they're the ones that are out there that are honorable. We need them. And, yeah. and like I say all the time, even criminals, when they get in trouble, they call the police.
Yeah. yeah. Well, and you're right, Robert. I mean, I think the overwhelming majority of cops out there are good people.
No doubt.
And you are a good person. You started out with good intentions. You just got you just got into that wrong crowd. Yeah. You had that one FTO or that one training officer that was training you, and you know, exposed to you all this stuff. And yeah. again, it's, do you want to, you know, have a target on your back? And not that it was right, but it was a different right. time back then with policing. It's just amazing. So you're in the woods and you're surviving. And I'm assuming at some points during those times, you were like, I can't do this anymore. I got to turn myself in, right?
My first week out there, I'm glad you brought that up. My first week out there, to show you how bad it was, I thought in the first week of about committing suicide, I think it was like the third, fourth, fifth, and sixth day of that first week, I thought about committing suicide. Actually, I placed the pistol up to my head on one of those days, but I just didn't do it because I'm one of those kind of people. And that's what got me through the academy. I have that type A personality where I just don't give up. That's what got me to do some studying about the woods. You know, I'm just mm-hmm. kind of a personality that I don't give up very easily. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the only thing that prevented me from pulling that trigger.
Yeah.
But the fear was so great, and this is what I wanted to mention to you. The fear was so great the first night that when I lay down in my tent and I was in my sleeping bag. Of course, I had my pistol there. And all kind of sounds, you know, that I'm not used to, because I'm from New Orleans, and mm-hmm. New Orleans, we used to hearing jazz bands. We're not used to hearing wolves and all these different kind of animals. Even some of the animals up there, we don't have down here, wolverines and, you know, moose and all that kind of stuff. But I was so afraid that, you know, what happened was I felt something touch my leg. And so I jumped up with my pistol. And to show you how afraid I was so afraid the first night that what happened was is that my leg had touched my other leg.
Oh, jeez. And you thought you thought it was something else. And, right. you know, I'm glad you didn't shoot your leg off, Robert.
Yeah, you're kind of losing it then. You know, you're so afraid that, you're kind of in a warp sense. You know, where you're just out of it. You can't use reasoning. And listen, I had many, many nights, because I don't want you to listen to think that, he went through 22 years and he never thought about this. Every time I thought about it, because you always see a police officer. And you know, that's a rough life, having to look over your back, all the time. You know, you get to a point where you're paranoid mm-hmm. and you think people are following you, and you can't ever use your real name in every state or every city you go into. You got to remember what name you used mm-hmm. Before. And, you know, all this kind of stuff is draining.
Yeah.
You know, and It took me a while, even. I mean, we're talking about an event that happened now, what, over 40 years ago.
Yeah.
But it only has been like the last 10 years that I will respond to Robert.
Yeah.
You know, you could say that. Yeah, you'd have to say that two or three times for me to.
That's so amazing.
Crazy.
Now, I know you grew up very religious. You learned about God and Jesus. Now, one thing I saw a segment on you that I thought was absolutely amazing is that you, not that it's amazing, but you wanted to test God.
Yes,
sir. You blamed him for your circumstances. You became an atheist, I heard.
Hardcore atheist.
You hate hardcore atheist. And there's nothing wrong for those people out there who, you know, if you're an atheist, power to you, whatever you want to do.
Yeah.
But you grew up really religious from your grandmother, and you tested God, and there was a point. Can you tell us about that story? I want you to tell the audience what you did. To I thought it was amazing what you did, and it really, that was the day where you were like, I need to turn myself in.
Yeah. Well, at this point, I'm in my 22nd year, and I'm as cold as ice at this point. I mean, you know, I was more apt to be a more compassionate to an animal than a human, you know? Mm-hmm. That's just the way I had to live. I had to be cold and deliberate and, you know, always suspicious. And my 22 years, and I traveled quite a bit to let your listeners know. From, I started off in Canada, wound up in the woods in New York, wound up in woods in Kentucky, wound up woods in Tennessee, just all over the place. You know, mostly national forests, spent a lot of time in the Smoky Mountains. So I spent a lot of time in national forests in one particular, but I never stayed in one place too long, you know, because I had to keep on the move. Anyway, I was in the woods of Tennessee, and that was my last stop. I didn't know it. And I had got to a point where I was, had noticed a plant. This plant would, and it's very common for plants, some plants to do this, but during certain times of the day, this plant would open its bloom and then close as it bloomed. And what I did was I just, before I went to forage and do some hunting, I just said, you know what? I began to revisit my grandmother and think about God again and the scriptures. I had never forgotten the scriptures, even though I was, you know, I was an atheist. I had never forgotten what I was taught. So I say, well, you know what, God, if you really exist, when I come back, let me see these flowers bloom. And I'll go off and I'm gone for 2 hours because, you know, I always had to leave. And you always hunt 2 or 3 miles away from your camp. And you always kill your animal where you're at. You never bring your animal to your camp. Mm-hmm. You only bring in what you can eat, you know, and because, you know, you don't want bears and stuff coming there. And so I came back and the flowers would bloom. And then another time I would say the opposite. You're closed at this time. And I just kept doing things like that, that were just odd things, you know, didn't make any sense. You know, I say today, if I see a black squirrel, I'll believe you. And then all of a sudden, and that's rare to see, you know, they're out there, but you know, they're no brown squirrels are more common than black squirrels. Mm-hmm. Then all of a sudden I would see a black squirrel. So I begin to think, in terms of, you know, something is going on here. I was getting a little afraid, but I said, well, you know what? And this was my ultimate test to God. I took an old 5-pound coffee can and I placed it upside down on the ground. And I took a pebble and put on top of the can. And I was going to bed that night. And I said, if I wake up in the morning and that pebble was underneath that can, I will not only believe you again, but I will turn myself in. Now, let me tell you something, as I tell a lot of people, because I've had a lot of naysayers on this, and, you know, they may have a point there, but, you know, hear me out on this. They say, well, a squirrel or something could have took, you know, they're known for that, you know, whatever. Okay, if that's what you want to believe, fine. But let me say something to you. For me, whatever happened, it happened for me to give myself in and to bring God again.
Exactly.
For me, it was underneath the can.
Mm-hmm.
And I did not look underneath the can. Okay. I was so petrified that I urinated on myself.
Jeez.
And I instantaneously, I mean, instantly lost all points of atheism and received God back in my life again. And I immediately went into the downtown area, because I was in the woods. I had to travel a bit to get to Memphis. And during those times, there were phone booths. you can actually have a phone book in there, mm-hmm. you see. And I knew that one of my sisters, her name would probably not change. I couldn't find any of my brothers in the phone book, and I found her name because she has a very unusual name. Mm-hmm. And I saw her name, and I called her up, and she was so young when I had left that she had only heard that she had an older brother named Robert. She could barely remember who I was. And after I said, "Oh, this is your brother Robert," and there was a little pause there, and she said, "Oh yeah, okay, I heard I had a, you know, I remember you." And I told her I wanted to give myself up and what I experienced. Hmm. And, I told her the next day I'm coming down, and my family was there. I caught a freight train from Memphis to New Orleans. I got there. That was my mode of traveling back then, too.
Yeah.
Freight trains. You'd be surprised. You can tell how what a freight train is carrying, where it's going.
Yeah.
But that's the book, Patrick.
Yeah.
Anyway, they all met me 2 days later in New Orleans. Of course, there was a lot of tears and crying, you know, all my siblings, my mom, everybody. But the strange thing that I really need to explain to you is how all this ended. And that is not just me being free, but we all went to the district attorney's office and to give him, you know, and I told him, hey, you know, Robert Leon Davis, here I am, you know, and the district attorney himself was there with. It was a famous district attorney there in Harry Connick. They looked through the computer and they couldn't find me. And because back then we wouldn't use computer.
Yeah.
Said, you're not wanted. Now, I could have instantly walked out of there. But I was so done with what I had just saw that I eventually had to prove who I was to the DA and to the police department.
Wow.
Across the street from the DA's office is our warehouse. And I told him that you're going to have to go over in the warehouse. You're going to have to manually look for my arrest record because I am on it. Because I didn't want to leave and ever have that looking over my shoulder again.
Yeah, yeah.
And so he went over there, and sure enough, they found the record. And it was so outrageous to them that, hey, this guy has been gone long. I mean, when I was gone, he was in grade school. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And it was so unusual that legally what they were supposed to do was arrest me on the spot and bring me to jail and book me. But instead, he felt like he walked me over to the courthouse and interrupted a judge and asked the judge what he thought about it. I mean, obviously the guy didn't want to see me go to jail, but he couldn't do it, you know? Yeah. And
because you were prepared for that, right, Robert? You were prepared to go to jail.
I'm still looking at 30 years. I mean, actually now keep in mind, when I left, I was 23. When I'm back, I'm like 46 years old.
Yeah, yeah.
So I missed most of my 20s, all of my 30s, and half of my 40s.
Yeah.
So it'd been better if I had went to jail at 23, served 30 years, I'd have got out at 53.
Well, if you survived.
if I would survive. But now I'm coming in at 46, still looking at 30, so now I'm getting out to 70s.
Yeah.
So, but I couldn't thank Patrick of a guard that telling me to surrender in order to have me bonded.
No.
I didn't know how or what was going to happen. Only thing I knew is I had to go through the process.
Yeah.
And so when I went there, of course, the DA felt what he felt. And she told the DA, you know, she said, you know what, I'm going to release you, sir, to your sister. And next 2 weeks from now, I want you back here. We're going to set up a court date. I don't think you're going to run because, you know, you gave yourself in. Because this is no story if I got caught.
Yeah.
This is no story, you know, because there are many people. But the story is that, you know, I through transformation.
Yeah, yeah.
Through repentance, you know, gave myself up.
Yeah.
And I owed up. When I was in court, she asked me, are you guilty of these crimes? And I told her, I said, not only these crimes, but many other crimes that I'm guilty of. When you're really done with something, you're just done. You want your slate clean.
Yeah.
You know? Which brings me to a point before we end the show. Of course, I know you know it, but I don't want people to think also when I profit on my book. You know, you know as well as I know that I donate profits to various women and children abuse centers. and also to the very same police department that I was, I donate money to the New Orleans Police Department for ethical training, which is very appropriate, you know.
Yeah.
And so I don't want anyone to think that I'm profiting on the bad. You know, it's just a small token of me giving back.
Well, and I think it's, you know, what you were saying earlier, sir, about the naysayers. I don't believe that. That's a sign from God. That's a higher power with the rock, because you were seeing all these signs too. You mentioned the black squirrel and some other things you were seeing, and that's a higher. That's just my opinion. I don't believe.
I haven't got to the point, Patrick, where I don't even debate it no more, because I understand
it's
that
what
some
you
people,
believe. It's what you believe.
Whatever it was enough to make me move.
Yeah.
And after 22 years, I mean, like the judge said, obviously and clearly, I mean, I could have still been out there, you know, and living and doing what I had to do, because my picture and photo had completely changed. When you're, you're 60 years old, you're not going to look like you did at 22.
Oh, no.
You're a totally different person.
Yeah.
My methods in living was so comfortable that I remember a guy that I was out in the woods, and this guy came out there, and he had little backpacks on him and suitcases and stuff. He had did something wrong, and he sat down, and I told him, I gave him some coffee, and I told him, he said, "Well, how long you been out here?" And at that time, I was out for 15 years, and I began to tell him for hours and hours what I had been through and who I missed, and that fella gave himself up the next day based upon what I was telling him.
Wow, that's amazing.
Said, "I can't do it, bro." He said, "I'm just going to go ahead on and turn myself in." And the next day I saw the guy walking through the woods saying, "Good luck." Of course, I had to move because I didn't know if he was going to have the law enforcement back on me. But I was just letting him know, hey, listen, you can't have any aunts. You can't have no uncles. You can't have no brothers, no sisters, no mom. You can't have no friends. If you do meet a girl for some kind of one night stand, you know, that's all it's going to be, because you can never reveal social security number. You know, it's not a life to live. But
jeez.
You know, but I did it for over two decades. And, and the judge is the one that advised me to write the book. She told me that, "Mr. Davis, you know, I'm going to take a shot on you." She said that because, you know, I was looking at 30 years and she said that.
You've already been through a ton of crap out in the woods, too. I mean,
she essentially said that I incarcerated myself.
Yeah.
And she gave me. But keep in mind, at the court, and I'm not knowing this, the day that I'm in court, she actually gave me the time, but she suspended it. Mm-hmm. I was surprised to hear that, you know, and when she suspended it, the only requirements were that that I stay out of trouble, of course.
Yeah.
And you know, which I did. I mean, I've never looked back. I mean, matter of fact, I had a 30-month, two-and-a-half-year probationary period, and my probation officer went to the court and cut it short. He said, "This guy's, he's sitting on my steps at the office even before I get there."
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You know, Your Honor, let him go. And she let me go, man, and that's been since 2001, and this is 2018, and 17 years now, and, you know, I never look back, and you know, I really do enjoy my freedom.
Well, and you're helping cops out there too, Robert.
Yep.
I mean, you talk to cops.
I know.
You do stuff in the academy,
and
you talk about the importance of, you know, keeping your integrity and you know, staying honest and stuff like that. And I think it's hard still. I mean, I think that I think the overwhelming majority of cops out there do the right thing, but I think that I still think that there's some bad cops out there. There's some corrupt cops.
Well, it's like I said, I'm almost willing to bet you a dollar of donuts that if you took a poll of bad cops and a poll of bad carpenters and a poll of bad cab drivers, you'll probably come up with the same percentage.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? You know, and it's not going to be large. It's going to be small. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But it's going to always be that thing, you know, that way, because with the police officer thing is the power. Because essentially, you know, you're talking about someone that can detain you, and they could, if they lie and have no honor, they could mess up your life.
Mm-hmm.
But now, here's what I want to say. The police officers now are in a position to be honorable and made to be honorable, because now, unlike during the time I was there, Now, the thing that made the difference between being honorable or being dishonorable, or believe it or not, are cell phones. Mm-hmm. When they started coming out with cell phone cameras, satellites on the cars, body cameras on officers, which protects both the citizen and the officer.
Yeah, I agree with them. I think they're great.
Yeah, but during that time when I was coming up, that was never thought about. They never knew where you were.
Yeah.
You know, for putting a satellite in the car, there was nothing about body cameras. There were cell phones, wasn't around then. They had the big bulky ones in the cars, but there was nothing you could take a picture with. So technology has helped make an officer be a little bit more honorable. Of course, you know, you can still do some bad, you know what I'm saying? But for the most part, most of the officers, and I talk to a lot of officers. It's funny because now I got more police friends now, including police chiefs, mm-hmm. that I know personally than I knew back then because of the work I'm doing.
but you went through hell to get where you're at.
Oh, yeah, I mean, now the cops here, now I'm down the street, they know me. You know, they wave at me, you know what I'm saying? You know, because they know I'm, you know, I preach against that. I talk to schools, university, talking to you. Whatever I can get the message out, man, you know, about honor, just corruption in general, no matter what field you're in.
And the thing about me that amazes me most about you, Robert, is that you could have remained that hard, bitter, callous, screw everybody, you know, and it really amazes me because you know as well as I do, sir, that a lot of people, you know, especially people who have gotten into trouble, maybe served time, they stay like that. They stay like that, but you came out of it and now you're doing great things.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, that was the thing that I realized. I remember when the judge told me, she said, you should write a book about this. And I thought about it. And now I've started, and again, I'm not computer literate, so I started writing. Mm-hmm. To show you how it works out, I started writing it longhand. Then when I finished the manuscript longhand, you know, there has to be some writing there, you know. I went to a transcriptionist, and I asked her, how much would this cost to put this in a form that I can make a book out of? And she quoted a figure like it was in the thousands of dollars. Mm. I began to walk out. She said, well, by the way, what your book is about? I sit there for 15, 20 minutes explaining to her that I had just came back in. I was on the run, blah, blah, blah. To show you the power of God, the lady told me, listen, give me the manuscript. Pay me back whenever you can.
Oh, jeez.
And isn't that something?
Well, you had an amazing story, too.
A $3,000 bill, which I paid her every bit of it because I was able to do that. Yeah. On the, when I self-published, now there's another part of the story. I self-published originally, and then some guy that happened to be a police officer that knew a literary agent put me in contact with a literary agent. So then I got mainline published through a police officer.
That's amazing.
And then when it got published, I was able to pay her all her money back. And the end of the story is not ending yet because right now, as we're speaking, I'm actually speaking to two companies. I haven't made a decision on which way I want to go with it yet. But I'm actually speaking with two producers that's out of Hollywood that's interested in making a movie based on my life.
Well, that is amazing, Robert. And I know you got your book out there, Running Scared. Where can people find your books?
You can get it anywhere on Amazon.
Anywhere on Amazon.
Yeah, anywhere on Amazon, any of the mainline booksellers and stuff like that. And beware, you know, I tell it like it is in the book. You know, I'm raw and I tell it how what I thought and what I did, of course, there's no vulgarity or anything like that. Yeah. But my purpose is to let people know how low a man can go, but also to let them know that how high a man can eventually transform himself.
And the importance of faith.
The importance of faith. Faith is everything, man. I hope, look, the things, if you look around at yourself every day, I mean, you know, you can just look at the human body and how it functions and know that there's got to be something operating this, mm-hmm. you know. Yeah, but I'm where I'm at, and so I believe.
Well, I appreciate it, Robert. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you, sir, for
coming on the show. It's an amazing story. I'll have everything linked up in the show notes. If you ever need anything, please, sir, you got my contact information.
Gotcha.
Please reach out to me. I wish you nothing but success in the future, sir.
Thank you, sir.
All righty.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast. For more strategies for self-improvement and resources based on today's episode, be sure to head to cjevolution.com. You can also connect to Patrick directly on social media at @Pat_Fitzgibbons with any questions, comments, or concerns. We look forward to helping you find more personal success on the next episode of the CJ Evolution Podcast.